The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
It's time to get in shape and shape up your health. Welcome to Fitness RX Radio with your hosts, Joe Piatero and Greg Valentino. If you're looking for information about health, training, fitness, and nutrition, then stay with us for the next hour. Now, here are Greg Valentino and Joe Piatero.
Warriors, come out and slay. Greg, hey. I'm in a fucking sick fucking mood tonight, bro, so you're going to have to excuse me if I just go off in fucking tangents.
Dude, do you know that I had a part in that movie? I was the ducky boy. Did you know that? And at the
Get
last
the fuck
second,
out of here.
No, no, swear to God. I was one of the main ducky boys. You know what's funny? I quit the movie because they had made me cut my hair like that. It was, you know, you got to remember, that was the movie that was made. I was a senior in high school.
That was 79 it came out.
Yeah, 1979. I was a senior in high school. And I had long hair, and they wanted me to cut them. I actually went all the way down there. Joy Todd was the you know, casting director. She wanted me so fucking bad, and I actually stopped, you know, because, you know, I would have just been one of the ducky boys. It was nothing like I didn't have, like, no major role, but I was one of the ducky boys, and my father and mother brought me down there, and I was like, fuck this, I'm not cutting hair. No way. So I actually was in the barber chair, too. I didn't want to cut my hair.
That's awesome. I have a friend, Frankie Skits, from Canarsie. He's a legitimately Skits. He's schizophrenic, but we call him Skits was his nickname. He was just a, you know, if you blinked, you didn't see him. It was in fucking, in the park in the Bronx. And he was like one of the fucking, you know, like nine guys in a gang. He was just one of them standing there.
I was going to be in all the scenes with the duck people. I had the whole fucking thing wrapped up. But you know what's funny? It wasn't much money. You're talking like $50 for the day.
Yeah,
but I didn't have like no major role, but I was in every scene for the Ducky Boys, and then I fucked the last second. I stopped. I was like, no fun. I'll tell you what. Another little known thing. Also, same thing. I was in a same thing. Me and my ex-wife were in a scene for the what the hell's the name of that movie? Goodfellas. But it was filled with boys and girls school. You know, that's the jail scene. We would have been in the background, so you probably wouldn't even see me a dot. We actually were there. I saw Robert De Niro, all of them. Got to meet all of them. I was on the set.
That was what, when she brings him the fucking drugs, with the sneaking in with the bread and all of that shit?
Yep. Remember that?
High School in Bed-Stuy?
That was filmed
Iverson?
In Boys and Girls High School in New York City, yep.
That's
that was
in Brooklyn,
not in a real jail.
Right?
And
the one in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn?
No, it was in Manhattan.
Oh, because there's a Boys and Girls High in the shithole in Brooklyn over there.
No, this was in Manhattan. It was like on the lower fucking east side or wherever it was. I think that's what's cool. Boy, I was there, and I sat there all fucking day. After
you were the guy getting
hours.
His dick sucked, right? There was a guy, wife was sucking his dick at one of those tables.
What do you mean?
In the Goodfellas, there's a scene where a guy's getting his fucking cock sucked by his wife at the visiting table there.
Oh, shit.
In that,
you know,
scene when Karen brings Henry to fucking drugs and shit. Yeah, there's a guy getting a fucking hum.
Right, well,
right?
I wouldn't be getting my dick sucked in there. I mean, my ex-wife wasn't really big on sucking cock as it was. That's supposed to be my ex-wife. But, no, I was in that, it was just a blip, though. You know what I mean?
What? That's fucking cool, man.
I was with a bunch of guys I knew and everything like that. We were in a little Italy, and the directors were down there, and they were like, "Yo, you're perfect for the movie because we're all jacked."
Shit.
You know, but we were in a background fucking thing.
Oh, that would have been fucking sick. But bro, fucking right now, we're gonna get back to that in a minute. Right now, I want to introduce to Extreme Radio audience Frank Shamrock. Frank, what's going on, buddy?
Nah, just living the dream, man. How you doing?
All right, man. It's Joe and Greg here.
How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm having a really pretty good day today.
Frank, yeah. You and I got a mutual friend. I don't know if he ever told you, but Carlin Coker.
Oh, yeah, Carlin.
Yeah, I grew up with Carlin. We were little boys together the whole time. He always tells me stories about you and stuff.
No way. Yeah, he's good peeps, man.
Yeah, he was like that as a kid, too, very focused. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's a good doctor. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. We've been best buds for a long, 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 long time. He actually works for the same magazine. You know, he was working with us, you know, with Muscular Development Magazine. That's where Joe and I are from over there.
Right.
You know, now he's with Flex Muscle Fitness. So, but anyway, so how's it going?
Good. Just, you know, retired from the physical game and I'm feeling like a regular dude these days.
So how's it going with the reality show, with the Bellator reality show?
Good. We did a season. We had, you know, all right ratings. It was a very expensive show, so I don't think they're going to pick it up for a second season.
Okay.
We've done another two or three since then, and now it's pilot season, so I'm lined up to do a bunch more. But the last one we did is kind of up our line of business. It's Gym Rescue, where we go around and rescue failing gyms and kind of get into that vibe. I did that with Randy Couture, and that'll come out in the early spring, so that's like the next one in the shoot.
Yeah, you guys had some big names as coaches on that thing, so that's pretty fucking cool, bro.
Yeah, it was awesome, and you know, the best part was they just literally they just let us go in this big giant warehouse where they had built our own training centers, and they just let us do our own thing. No one bothered us, and we got their own camps, and then every 9 days we showed up and fought somebody else.
And so now I got to ask you a question, though. I mean, you fought in so many of the different organizations, and you did the color commentating for Strikeforce and everything. But you know, it's almost kind of frustrating, I think, as an MMA fan. I mean, listen, obviously the UFC is fucking huge, and everybody enjoys it, and nobody can take anything away from them. But it almost seems like they've become like the WWE of MMA, where they swallow up all these other organizations, where it kind of takes away from these other organizations. I kind of think that's kind of like cheating, you know, cheapens the game a little bit and takes it away from the fans, where you're trying to get into this new organization. There's nothing wrong with a competition as far as another league or organization or promotion, however you want to describe it. But it seems like every time there's one that starts to make some noise, Dana swallows it up like McMahon. Does that get frustrating for like you? You work for Strikeforce, now you're with Bellator.
No, I mean, it's a natural order of progression, you know, consolidation in the business, and they certainly have the biggest brand in the industry. But, you know, they're kind of snake-bitten by their own success. They have the biggest brand, but they don't really know how to create stars. They just have a vehicle to promote stars.
Uh-huh.
So anytime a star comes along, you know, they got to buy them up and sort of, you know, consume them. But it's been great for business, and, you know, I think they got the reins and are pretty much driving the show, so whatever they want to do is kind of their vibe now.
But,
you know, that's the only bad part, is if you're not playing on their team, you're on the other team. But, you know, other than that, I had a good run at 16 years, you know, in the game, and I worked for UFC for a couple of them, but I enjoyed those years, and I had tremendous success, you know, before and after them. So, you know, I can always see them as a plus.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you were fucking phenomenal in UFC. I mean, your Ortiz fight is, you know, it goes down in history. It's one of the best fights. People still talk about it, and rightfully so. And you also did some other cool stuff and some other promotions too, and won some belts there. And what were some of the things that you look back on your career, your active career, and you just say, like, holy fuck, how did I get out of that one alive? Like one of those crazy fucking fights where you just couldn't believe how you just got walked out of there, victorious or not, just to survive kind of night.
Well, sadly, a lot of them look like that for me.
Hey, come on, you're selling yourself short, man. You wanted a race out there, Frank.
No, seriously, I was just definitely afraid of fighting, you know, since I was a little kid. And I was just such an athlete and such a competitor that, you know, when they rang the bells, if you came out and tried to hit me, you know, I was going to hit you first and get it over with. But you know, for me, it was when I was injured, because I was always, you know, pushing the envelope of the sport anyways and pushing, you know, reaching for higher broadcast mediums for the sport and, you know, really trying to get my brand to the next level. But, you know, so I was always working two or three jobs besides being a fighter. So, you know, occasionally, like when I fought Phil Baroni, I mean, I blew my ACL out and I was just done. I mean, I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. But I'd leveraged everything on me showing up and performing. So, yeah, I went out and performed and, you know, luckily I won. But I took a lot of damage, and it just, you know, I see it now, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe anybody did that. All these doctors, you know, are just like, wow, this, you know, you really shouldn't go do that. But, you know, I based my brand on showing up in the moment, so I had to show up. Mm-hmm. But it was always being hurt. Those are the ones that got me. One time I tore my tendon off my shoulder.
Oh, wow.
Boxing, you know, I was boxing with this 135-pound guy, and I finally got him in the corner, and I was like, I'm going to kill him, and I threw the giant right hand of death, and it actually tore the tendons right off my shoulder, and he moved.
Wow.
And then, but I promised, you know, the Japanese that I would show up in Tokyo in a couple weeks, and I'd fight, so I did. But, you know, it was 15 minutes of just horrible pain and discomfort, because when you're hurt and you're trying to compete at the highest level, it just doesn't go well together.
Is there a difference between the Japanese fans and the American fans? Like, I know over there, they seem to be very, like, really into it. Not that the American fans aren't, but do you notice a difference?
Yeah.
At all?
They have a different, they just have a different appreciation, I think, of combat sports in particular. And, you know, I mean, I started going there 20 years ago when you didn't hold hands in public and there was no kissing. It was very closed, you know, society. People didn't cheer. They just kind of went, ooh, and ah. Very different. Now, you know, they've ratcheted up. They're very Western-like, and you get some good cheers and screams out of them. But the one difference is I think they have a different appreciation. I think they view it more of like a play and more of like a story.
More entertainment, right?
Yeah, it's more of entertainment. And you put on a good show, win or lose. You know, you get their respect, you get their dollar, and that way they're, you know, they're loyal, strong. You know, I like the fans in Japan because, you know, as long as you put up your best, you know, they're your fan.
Did you ever fight somebody you actually didn't like, aside maybe from your brother?
Sure. The only guy I really didn't like, and it was just a series of, you know, actually it was him being a brilliant strategist, but the only guy I didn't like was John Lober. And I fought John Lober for my, I think, third or fourth title defense in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And nice guy. I mean, I knew him outside the, you know, I knew him outside the business. And we had mutual friends and Tito and other people. But when it came close to fight time, he just went crazy and started, like, sending me dirty emails and, like, you know, ordering food to my room in the middle of the night. And just being, you know, just mean. And you know, I never let my emotions get control of me until that night I fought him. And yeah, I could have finished him about 30 seconds, and I gave him about 7 more minutes of beating because I was so mad at him.
Did you ever talk to these guys? Like, well, you're kicking your ass, like, seeing one more?
He's the only guy I've ever lost my cool with. And, yeah, I, you know, at one point about, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes in, I had his head pinned on the cage, and I'd hit him real good. And I dropped him, and he's all split open, And he goes, that's it, Frank, I'm done. I can't take anymore. I was just like, you motherfucker. I'm going to beat you to death. Because I was mad. You know, I can't believe you said those things to me. Because, yeah, I took all that stuff personal. But then after the fight was over, I was like, wow, that guy just gamed me. I can't believe that. So, you know, he got the better of me. I got the better of him in the fight. But, he won the mental game on that night. It's never happened again.
Do you guys ever talk to each other, though, in the ring? Do you ever say, like, I'm going to kick your freaking ass or any kind of, you know, like, do you guys do that stuff with each other? You know, because we see it on TV. And,
you know,
when you guys are locked up, do you ever say, oh, man, you got me on my ass on that one. I'm going to fall. When I get out of this, I'm going to kill you. Do you guys ever do that stuff? Or?
No. Especially the new guys. But I used to talk to my guys all the time because, you know, I had the whole psychological vibe going pretty strong. And I learned it from Boss Rudin. When I first fought Boss, back in the day in Japan, in Pancrase, he was talking to himself the whole time. Oh, I'm so strong, and that will not work. And he was saying all these crazy things, and I thought he was talking to me. And then I realized about 5 minutes in, he was talking to himself, and he was kind of keeping himself up and keeping himself focused. But I never forgot how distracting it was for him, because I was talking to him. He's like, I'm so strong. And I was like, no, you're not.
You know what's funny? But he has a lot of good to say about you, by the way.
Wonderful guy. Wonderful dude.
You guys were going to go to the movies a couple weeks, about a month or two ago, right?
We never made it. We all got busy and stuff. So, yeah, he's a good dude. And so, you know, I learned in that fight that, you know, you can get in people's heads when you talk. So, you know, when I fought Phil, when I fought all these guys, I was always, you know, reaching over and whispering to him, you know, I'm going to knock you out, or, you know, you're getting tired. I can hear you breathing. Even Tito, when I talked to Tito the whole time, and he never said a word until the fourth round. I was like, Tito, you're getting tired. Tito, you're getting tired. I'm going to knock you out. And he goes, no, I'm not. I was like, I got you, dude.
Yeah, I love it.
See, that's cool stuff that, you know, the guys that are not at ringside can't hear and stuff. You know, like Greg said, we're on TV watching it, or even we're in the arena watching it. We're not right on top of the apron there. We can't, you know, hear it or see it. So it's pretty cool to see that, because that's, you know, that's definitely stuff that's inside tricks and mind games and things that only, like, the veteran fighters really could probably do and really get a good effect on their opponent. So that's really fun to hear, man. Definitely something cool, man. So frankshamrock.com, you got a lot of good stuff going on your site. Why don't you tell the listeners a little about it, what you got on your website, Frank?
My website, I don't know. I got cool pictures and lots of great stories and whatnot. But mainly it's just to kind of post and keep track of where I'm going and what's going on and what my next projects are. And right now I'm working on this film with my brother. Trying to get him aboard. It's a feature film, but it's a life story film, and I'm really excited about it. So I'm just kind of tiptoeing around that, trying to get that figured out.
When do you hope for that to be, you know, ready and coming out for the fans?
Well, it'd probably be next year at the minimum, because it's a healthy project, so it'll probably take us at least a half year in pre-production, and then maybe a half year or more to shoot it. But it's basically the story of my life, and we tell it in a very exciting and I think interesting way with a great twist at the end. So I'm just hoping to get it done. You know how hard it is to get a film made, and mm-hmm. I've had some great luck last year. I made two reality shows and a documentary in like 3 months.
Awesome.
So I took like a breather, and now I think I'm going to get serious again and make some more, you know, media projects.
Yeah, we got all the links to your Facebook and all the stuff going on in the article there. So make sure everybody check out frankshamrock.com and check out his Facebook. Go ahead, Greg.
I just want to ask him one thing, because my girlfriend thinks he's hot and she's Mexican. She's saying he's Mexican. I know he is, because she read your name somewhere. Your birth name or something. So what nationality can I tell you are?
Me?
Oh, yeah.
My mom is a 5'7" woman with red hair and freckles. My dad is a little Hispanic man, Mexican Indian guy. So, I was born Frank Alicio Juarez III.
Is that Mexican, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad is a full-on Mexican guy. My grandparents, full-on Mexicans.
Because my girlfriend's from Mexico, too. Mm-hmm. She's Puebla.
Yeah, I'm like half white. It's weird. And my mom's white. And I never knew my dad much, but he was a brown dude.
Awesome. Thank you, Frank.
Hey, Frank, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We got to check you out, frankshamrock.com. Also, your Facebook page is on there. And make sure you check out the Fight Master Bellator MMA, the reality show that Frank is one of the coaches on. Also, he said the Randy Couture is on there as well. So, Frank, I'd like you to join us so much tonight at Extreme Radio. We had a great time with you, and we'll talk to you soon, bro.
Right on. Thanks, guys. Keep training.
Thank you, Frank. You rock, bro.
You too, man. Check us out on the other side of this break, and we'll be right back right here, Greg and Joe.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jim Kelly, former Buffalo Bills quarterback and Pro Football Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Joe Pitaro and Greg Valentino.
Fitness RX for Men is the ultimate men's print publication, website, and radio show. More than just fitness, we'll also bring you the best news in sports, entertainment, and lifestyle. Fitness RX for Men was established first as a magazine in 2003. Be sure to visit our website, www.fitnessrxformen.com, and check out our social media pages for up-to-the-minute news and tips every day. It's your ultimate prescription for the perfect body. Visit FitnessRxForMen.com today.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, it's Artie Lang, and you're listening to Greg and Joe. Check it out.
You are listening to Fitness RX Radio with hosts Greg Valentino and Joe Piatero. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also send an email to jpiatero@advancedresearchmedia.com. Now, back to Fitness RX Radio.
And I want to thank Frank Shamrock once again for joining Greg and I on Extreme Radio. Check out his website, frankshamrock.com. We got the links right there on the preview article on our website, as well as also his Facebook page. But right now, Greg, I can't even say one of my favorite movies. My favorite drama movie of all time is Rocky. And for me to actually say that we have one of the stars of that movie on the phone right now, I don't even know how to do it. So I'm going to pass it to you and let you introduce our next guest.
Well, I think we should just bring on Paulie, better known as Burt Young. I mean, the guy's a legend to all of us guys growing up and everything. Are you there, Burt?
Thank you, man. Thank you very much. I can introduce myself.
Oh, please do. Go right ahead.
Handsome, attractive, well-mannered. A delight to have in the living room.
Oh,
how's that?
That was wonderful. Burt, you are a legend of the screen, a legend of the big screen and the small screen, and also we were just talking with you on the break. You're also a very accomplished painter. I bet you a lot of people out there don't realize that. Why don't you, we're definitely going to talk some movies and stuff like that, but why don't we talk quickly about your painting and let them know when, you told us how long you've been doing it. Why don't you let the whole listeners let them know.
Folks, Greg and Joe's people, good to be with you all. I just had a show in Canada and on Long Island, Port Washington. I have a studio. I show and I actually saw my work, and it makes me feel very good when people like the work.
Yeah, I mean, you got some beautiful artwork on there. I have a link on the article, with all of your stuff going on over there, and it's also your IMDb page, and it's amazing to see how you're able to do painting like that, and then you have such great talent, obviously, on the screen. All the way back to 1970, your film career began, so I have to ask you the easiest questions, but I got no choice.
Go right ahead.
Rocky. I mean, obviously, no one had any idea what kind of impact that film would make on the whole world. I mean, not just the film industry, but everybody, myself included, as a young kid growing up, a young Italian, New York, Brooklyn kid, and that movie came out when I was 9 years old, and that was it for me. I was, I was going to be a boxer.
Of course.
That's all I cared about.
Okay, I know.
Did you guys have any idea while you guys were making that, like, how this was going to be? Did you know that you had gold in your hands?
At the time, I had a part in a little bowling alley in College Point. I come from Corona by myself, but they gave me the script. I never read something so strong and attractive with good feelings. No, the agents didn't recognize it. They didn't want to negotiate because there was no money. They didn't want to negotiate. I says, boys, this is way more. I says, fellas, this is probably the best thing that ever came by me. I knew I didn't know what a breakthrough movie was then, but I knew it was very bright and good. It was two weaklings become a one strong person.
Mm-hmm.
The guy and the girl, I loved it. Immediately I did.
I mean, the part you played, obviously, Paulie, you know, in all the movies, but that first one, your effect on that movie, I mean, it was just, I mean, you just
phenomenal.
Pulled it off amazingly. I mean, it was just
phenomenal.
It was beautiful. And I actually saw it on some cable channel about a month or so ago. I'm flipping through, and Rocky is on, and I'm like, I'm watching the rest of this. I don't give a shit how late it is. I'm staying up late to watch
it. The movie stands up.
Oh, stands up forever.
Stallone. He invented a moving work of art that really became part of our literature.
Absolutely. Hey, Bert, you're Italian, right? Are you?
I'm Italian.
You are? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you what, to all us Italians, you know, I mean, that part, you know, that Paulie, I mean, you played that part like, I mean, I have uncles that are just like you, you know? I feel like Joe wanted to be a boxer after San Rocky, I wanted to be a butcher. I wanted to work in a meatpacking district.
Shamrock meat.
Shamrock meat.
Did Stallone really punch that them ribs like that? Or, I mean, was he hitting that meat really hard?
Oh, yeah, he did. You know, he's very committed. He's a very good athlete. He was always a pleasure to work with. He works fast. He works hard. He choreographed most of the scenes. Very good to work with.
We used to walk around mimicking you, saying, hey, Rock, you're going to break the ribs. You know what I mean? You're going to kill him. You're going to put us in jail for murder. You're going to kill him. We used to mimic you, too, right, Joe?
Oh, man, freaking bro. I've been throwing Rocky lines around since, like I said, I was 9 when it came out. We've been doing it ever since, me and my friends, and that's a timeless classic. It'll never stop. But, Bert, you were in a heck of a lot of other movies, and one of my favorite roles that you had was with Rodney playing Lou in Back to School. I mean, that was something a little different from your norm, but that was also another phenomenal role that you were able to do. What was it like working with Rodney on the set?
Well, it was a pain in the ass. but only because we shot most of up in Wisconsin. And on a big college there. And he had a very foul mouth to the kids, and they didn't know if he was kidding or what, the girl kids. And the first day there, this little kid, a boy, student, comes to me. He said, good working with you, Mr. Young. I said, where are you going? He said, Rodney fired me. I said, so what'd you do? Nothing. He didn't like my looks. So the producer comes over there. I say, look, producer, you don't fire no kid that I'm working under. You don't do that. You want to see me come out of the trailer? That isn't the way. And then the kid wouldn't come back. He felt hurt, you know.
Oh,
that's great. What about, you know what movie I really liked? I got to say this. I loved Pope of Greenwich Village. I loved when you played that role. I mean, that was great when you ran. when you you were so serious in that movie. You played a great, like a mafia boss. I love that.
That was a good movie. Everybody did well there. Eric, Mickey Rourke, everybody.
Oh, that was a great cast.
Remember the beautiful girl? That was the girl from, I can't remember her name, tall girl, very lovely.
Was it Daryl Hannah?
Daryl Hannah, you got it.
Yeah, it was Daryl Hannah, I loved that movie. I loved the way you were so serious. You played a great like mafia boss too in that movie. I thought.
Well, I am a very scary person.
You were scary as Lou in the Rodney movie. You were like, I mean, you were kicking ass in that movie. So
that was funny.
That was a star.
Remember who my co-star was? Who just played a big Superman? The kid. You got to help me. Played Chapman, Charlie Chapman, and Superman?
Joe, who played Superman in that? Do you know what he's talking about? I didn't see it.
Well, you guys are that sharp, I swear.
I'm sorry. Superman, I'm thinking Christopher Reeve, but he probably don't mean
that. No, later.
No. He's talking about...
Later. He's a big superstar now.
Yeah, I think I know who he's talking about. The dark-haired kid, Joe.
Dean Cain?
No.
Michael, help us out. Michael, do you know? All right, Tania, maybe he knows. Let us know if you know, because I'm drawing a blank here.
He plays also the detective. That's all. I'm not going to talk anymore about that.
Oh,
you guys are very disappointing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just joking.
I feel like a tadrul now. I mean,
No. I was there in the movie, and I don't remember. That speaks well about me.
No, that's okay. That was great. You know, but there's no more Rocky coming up, huh? No more of them movies. No more of that.
There's rumors. I heard from the producer that they're talking about a movie called Creed, where Apollo's boy wants to be a fighter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Something like that. You know, he's got a very fertile imagination, Sylvester.
Yeah, yeah.
And anything that's standing, he'll sell it. If you sit still too long, they'll put a price tag on you.
You know what, though? You better have Paulie in that movie. I don't care, Creed or not, you better have Paulie, because your character's been in all of them, and it's been phenomenal, you know what I mean?
Oh, thank you. Well,
that was one of the mainstays of the whole cast, so, I mean...
If they dump me, it'll be sacrilegious.
I ain't going to see it.
I won't see it.
If you're not
then.
In it, I'm boycotting that thing.
We boycott.
The heck with him.
But when you go places, do people like recognize you as Paulie? Do you get people calling you on the street, hey, Paulie? You know, do you get that a lot?
A lot of things. Yeah, people recognize me. I think it's... I'm just glad they don't throw tomatoes at me. I just finished a play that I wrote. A one-character play. Is called Artist Found in Port Washington Flat. And what it is about a year ago, I filmed a hologram of myself, a big size, one take, an hour and 20 minutes. And then I come in the theater through the audience, where the audience is. I got a bathrobe on. Packets with chicken, everything in my. I walk and I look at all the people. I didn't expect them out there. I pull out a gun. I walk. I face them down. I say, just don't be caught in a New York moment. Take it from them. And I stare at them. But you don't look that unsavory. But. You know, I don't come out of the studio too much because the paparazzi are crowded in Port Washington. But I come down to get some lunch for my daughter. And I said, but I cheated today. I got this cooked chicken, Kentucky or something. But she'll never know. I'll put accoutrements around the plate. And I take out a bunch of carrots. I take a celery and peanut butter. And I said, dress up the plate. She'll never know. Look, I'd invite you people upstairs, but there's too many of you, and you learned long ago, don't show favoritism. But you look okay. Don't make a ruckus. I'm going to start a new painting. So I go backstage. As I'm backstage, the hologram pops up on the chair. He starts talking. Thank you very much, towards the audience. But I'm really not here for you. I'm here for this artist, actor, Arthur Taylor, who's not a bad fellow, but years and years ago, he lost his daughter. But he won't let the poor kid go. Now, he goes on for a little bit of prologue. Mm-hmm. So I open the lock of the door. I come out. Now, we're both dressed the same. I come out. And I said, oh, you see the people out there? I said, people, this is my conscience. Don't believe a word he says. I don't. And that's how to place the huss.
Wow, funny.
That's awesome.
Hey, I think it is. I think it's pretty, I invented the whole thing. The hologram is, and so we interact, he and I. Pretty cool.
This is your idea? This was your baby? Like, this is your baby?
Yeah.
Are you on the script and everything?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, Bert has a few things under his belt, you know, plays and movie scripts and stuff. But yes, I just got a message from our engineer, Michael, and he mentioned Robert Downey Jr. was the guy you were talking about, Iron Man.
Listen to the engineer.
See, there you go. Michael, you're right on the money. Boom, bingo.
Thank you, engineer. You could hang out with me anytime you help me.
That's funny. Yeah, it's Iron Man's the movie, right? Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, I was thinking Superman. I was thinking Dean Cain and all. You know,
it was called Iron Man. I didn't see. I'm sorry to say.
I think I seen the first Superman movie and the first Batman. That was the last ones for me. But Bert, also you were in the Sopranos episode, and me and Greg are huge Sopranos fans. So
yeah,
how was that? You played Bobby Bacala's dad in that.
Yeah,
how did that work out for you? What was
wonderful.
The how'd it go?
It was special because the boss, Mr. Soprano, Gardena, I go on the show. That one and the face Emmy that they got with my part. With Emmys, you have to nominate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. And you have to pay for your nomination. I think that's crap. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So there's many shows that wanted me to nominate. I didn't do it. I thought that's sort of vulgar. I don't like that. It's like tooting your own horn, you know.
But
when I went on there, he and the whole cast started clapping. He says to me, he said, Bert, thank you for coming on the show. And the old timer who played his father, I think, Michael Jim,
Uncle Junior, you mean,
Uncle,
right?
I'm bad with names. He said, to walk with a mess. He says, they were very warm to me. They made me feel safe and good.
Yeah, that was a great series. I mean, we're big fans of it. So, then when we had you on this show, we were looking at some of your things. I was like, wow, he was on The Sopranos too. I forgot for a minute because you've done so many things. And then when I saw that, it was pretty cool to see. But is there one role that sticks? I mean, you did so many cool things. You were on MASH years ago. I mean, you were on so many great series and obviously films too. Is there one that kind of sticks out in your mind that you thought of?
I did a few of the Berettas with Robert Blake.
Uh-huh.
And that was interesting because I would write them as I went. The whole crew would chill out when I come, because he would yell at everybody, but not me, you know.
You squashed that little guy if you did, right?
Well, it wasn't that I think he knew. I knew what I could do and what I could do. But we did a thing. I played a retard on that show. That one, everybody, another Emmy, the cameraman, everybody. It was quite a show.
Yeah.
I was robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. So I did three of those shows for him. And one was an Orthodox Jew I played. And I just come over from Kiev. And that was one nice. I had a good time. I'm sorry for what happened with that guy and the poor girl.
That was a tough situation he went through.
Yeah,
but that was a great pro. I remember I used to watch that all the time. I loved The Rudder. That was a great show. And, a lot of the shows you were on, I mean, you were just on so many things. I mean, that part you played in, I think it was the Law and Order Special Victims Unit, when you shaved your whole body hair so you didn't leave any DNA behind.
Yeah, what a creepy guy. Wasn't that a creep?
Oh, what a role. You sold that so good. And I don't mean that in a bad way either.
I know. I was a low life, too.
I was watching that with my wife, and you came on. I'm like, Paulie! I was like, all right.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody knows him. Paulie!
But that was such a, it was howling. The way you just, you did it, oh, it was, and then you, the girl who played your daughter was defending you,
yes,
and, you know, and then when they realized that it was you were the perp and at the end of the
show. My team, what I was trying to do for that show was to make the law look wrong. Mm-hmm. I wanted the audience to be convinced the harassness poor guy. So that's what I was working for, to make something sympathetic.
And then all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh.
The son of a bitch. I don't like him myself.
This disgraziato. He did it after all. But you got some great stuff. I mean, I got the links up there. I want everybody to make sure you check out Bert's site. It's BertYoungArtAndFilm.com spelled out. He's got his paintings up there. He's got a blog. He's got all his information up there. And he also got a link to his IMDb, which speaks for itself. I mean, it's your paintings. It's almost Picasso-like, Bert. I got to say that. It kind of gives me a little reminder of some of those classic Picasso.
You know what helps? Helps that you don't have an education sometimes. That's what I feel. But the only I had an education with the actor. I worked very diligently with Lee Strasberg at the Actor Studio. He was sort of my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, he's gone, but I still work with him. I still fail him with the work.
Okay, he still helps you out even in the afterlife kind of thing. Yeah, you know what? You've had an amazing career, and it's not like it's over. You still got some good stuff going on. You do some great script writing, and this was just a pleasure, Bert, and I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight.
For me also.
Thank you so much, Bert.
All right, Bert. You have a great night.
Fellas.
Thanks for joining
us. All good to us all, okay?
You got it.
Thank you, man. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank the engineer again.
Michael, I love you, Mike.
Bye.
All right.
God bless, Bert.
We'll be here to wrap this thing up. Greg and I are going to do our shtick right after this quick message.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Fitness RX for Men is the ultimate men's print publication, website, and radio show. More than just fitness, we'll also bring you the best news in sports, entertainment, and lifestyle. Fitness RX for Men was established first as a magazine in 2003. Be sure to visit our website, www.fitnessrxformen.com, and check out our social media pages for up-to-the-minute news and tips every day. It's your ultimate prescription for the perfect body. Visit fitnessrxformen.com today.
Hi, I'm Shannon Sharp, Fitness RX for Men. Bam!
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Hey, what's up? Mario Lopez here, and we're at Gio's Brooklyn Boxing Club doing a photo shoot for Fitness RX for Men.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Fitness RX Radio with hosts Greg Valentino and Joe Piatero. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also send an email to jpiatero@advancedresearchmedia.com. Now, back to Fitness RX Radio.
And, of course, thanks again to Burt Young. Make sure you guys check out his site, Burt Young Art and Film, burtyoungartandfilm.com.
Yo, Paulie
was great. Yeah, Paulie was fucking great, man.
So. Yeah, I know. That was great, dude. Anywhere you go, no matter what, he can play fucking Shakespeare. If you fucking see him on the TV, he's always going to be falling.
He's falling. And it's not even a typecast. It's not like, you know, like, say, Spock, you know, put on the fucking pointy ears. Paulie's not in a bad way, Paulie. It's just that it was such a fucking great role. And he was so convincing as that fucking down-and-out guy with the bottle in his fucking smock pocket. It just was fucking great, bro.
That's not typecasting. You know, that's like when people get crazy, you know what I mean? Like, some of these actors, they don't like the fact that they're known. But, dude, that's what you're known for. Let me tell you something. All those other roles, you could add them all up together. He would have just been like, yeah, wait, what was that guy's name? When it comes to the Rocky thing, you know, he's a legend for that. You know what I mean?
It's like I'm known for my 14-inch cock. I mean, why would I hide from that?
You know what's funny? That's, you know, I know the story.
I don't know about cock. I might have a 14-inch fucking schnoz. I don't know about a fucking schlong, but... Hey, we want to just throw it out there. Confirmed for March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Artie fucking Lang, Gregory.
Dude, Artie Lang, here's a fucking funny fucking guy for you. Artie Lang is a funny, I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, that's going to be a fucking ass-kicking. Then next week on the first show in February 3rd, we have comedian and also co-host of That Metal Show, Don Jameson. He's he co-hosts the show with Florentine and also Darcy LaPierre. She's one of the rodeo girls. She rides around with a cowboy hat and little fucking boobs are bouncing on the fucking horses on some new reality show. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll put on some clips on the site and on the forum, and you guys can check it out like I will for the first time if you're not a fan of the rodeo girls. But she's a piece of ass, and what the fuck, man? I got no complaints about that. But, I mentioned Florentine, Greg, and this kind of reminded me. I had a little thing. I was listening to, you know, sports radio driving to work, and there were fucking contingency plans with the Super Bowl. If there's a snowstorm, it's Super Bowl in New York and New Jersey, whatever the fuck you want to call it, and we might have to move the game to Saturday night. And I was remembering when we were talking with Florentine last month or whenever the fuck it was on this program, he was saying how football has become like a nerd sport, and it's all for this pussy bullshit where it's not a guy's game anymore. When the fuck did it make a big deal if it was cold and snowy fucking football game?
Dude, what was the old Super Bowl when they were fucking or whatever it was, where they were plowing the field and shit? Well, it was in the middle of the game. They'd have a plow come out and friggin', you know what I mean? Wasn't it like one of them, like Baltimore, one of those?
That was in a playoff game.
It was a playoff game.
That was a playoff game. But that's part of my point, Greg. The championship games, AFC, NFC, can be played in a fucking blizzard. You can have fucking Alaska and Antarctica fucking temperatures. But because the Super Bowl is a bunch of fucking faggot motherfuckers that are going to sit there, corporate bow tie fucking cocksuckers that wouldn't know a first down from a fucking firstborn, is going to sit there and complain that it's cold and snowy, so they might have to move the game up because the fans are going to be cold.
Dude, they can't move the game. It's impossible. You got too many, you know how many people that, you know, you fuck up everybody's plans. You'd screw the whole weekend up, number one. Number two, let me tell you something. I hope it fucking snows like it's never snow. I can't stand snow. I live in fucking, right, you know, New York City suburb right here. And let me tell you something. I hope it fucking snows down there. For the first time in my life, I'm praying for snow. I hope it fucking snows on all the motherfuckers. I can't give a shit. My New York Giants aren't in their fucking goddamn game. Or the Jets. I like the Jets too. You know that. But I'm more of a Giant fan. But most of my teams, I could give a shit. What I don't like is they make it. This is now like a holiday, the Super Bowl shit. Give me a fucking break.
We're gonna have this fucking bullshit dog and pony nonsense.
Dude,
it's not even the fucking game anymore.
They shut down the city. They shut it down 15 blocks in New York City. Fucking, you shut down. Give me a fucking break.
This is another thing now. This is another fucking part that annoys me, and I got to fucking rant a little bit. And like I told you, I was in a little bit of a goofy mood. And then I wanted to talk about bringing Mike in on something now. So fucking Mike, I got to ask you a question. You're an Arizona guy, right?
Yeah, I'm in Arizona.
Okay. I was at the Super Bowl in Arizona in, what was it, 2007, February 2008, 2007 season.
Right.
Just like they're saying this is the New York Super Bowl, which is fucking bullshit. It's a New Jersey fucking Super Bowl, okay? Right. And I'm a New Yorker, so I hate saying that, but I got to be honest. Now, when I was at the fucking Super Bowl there, we were downtown in Phoenix. The NFL had us up in the media hotels in Phoenix. The media center was where we had the fucking media day, the radio row, and we were right by the Diamondback Stadium in downtown Phoenix. But right. The game, you know, was held in Glendale at the fucking Cardinals ballpark.
Yep.
How far? I mean, we were on that fucking NFL bus for over an hour at least, it felt like, busting
us. To get from downtown Phoenix to Glendale, you're looking, between like 50 minutes to an hour and a half.
Right? So I know it was like an hour and change. We left like at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning to get there for a 6 o'clock kickoff. We were there all fucking day. It was great. I'm not complaining. Right. I got a fucking free ticket to the Super Bowl, soup to nuts. I ate my balls off. I had to pay for the hotel and plane, but hey, you don't get everything in this world for free. But the thing is, like people saying, oh, the Super Bowl's in New York, and I'm trying to like give them a reference point of how it's different, and I'm trying to use that Arizona Super Bowl as a fucking example because that's kind of like what it was. The stadium is the stadium, and right. Everything else is all in the city, in Manhattan, outdoors. It has nothing to do with where the stadium is.
Right.
So that's kind of like what you guys had in Arizona in 08, right?
Right. I mean, you couldn't call it, Phoenix. It wasn't really Phoenix. It was in Glendale, but everything that was going to happened in downtown Phoenix.
Wait a minute. You're saying, though, in Arizona, that's an hour and a half drive. It's fucking 10 minutes. What people don't realize is New York and New Jersey are brother and sister, separated by the Hudson River, which is tiny. So my friend Bob Bonham lives in Carlsbad, New Jersey, okay? And I live in New York, right in the suburb of New York City, and he can make it to Midtown where the ball drops in 9 minutes. I could be in Manhattan. I could be in a Battery, down in the Battery Park down there, and I couldn't make it to Midtown in 9 minutes. So I'm just saying that that's why it's kind of like, it's the New York area. That's why they're called the New York Giants, but they don't play in New York. They play in Jersey, but, you know, that's because they started out playing in Yankee Stadium, which, you know, they should go back. Fuck that.
Bro, it could take you 45 minutes to go across town on 42nd Street.
Hey, but I don't understand how you fucking build a new goddamn stadium in the northeast of the United States that's a fucking winter stadium. It's not like Yankee Stadium or Citi Field, which is where the Mets play, which is a summer-based park.
Yeah, baseball summertime.
How do you not fucking dome that thing? I don't understand
it. Too much money. They wanted to. It was going to cost them a couple extra million to put in a retractable dome. That was the original plans had that in there.
That's bullshit. Do you know the Roman Coliseum had a dome? a retractable dome. They had a fucking canvas thing that fucking.
But they had cheap labor. They had fucking slaves doing it. It was different. They didn't have to pay anybody. There was no unions back then. There was no Jimmy Hoffa buried in the old Meadowlands.
You only get a bunch of Mexicans. We could get the whole fucking thing done for nothing. I mean, not for nothing. And I could say that, motherfuckers. My girlfriend's Mexican. She's right here, by the way. But what I mean by that is the fucking, because they work. The Mexicans work. You get a union, these fucking guys. You ever drive past a construction site or guys on the side of the road, ten guys standing one guy's digging and shit like that? Get out of here. You know what I mean?
And then you got some fucking dykey-looking bitch waving an orange flag.
Oh, please. if they were Mexicans, they'd be done in no time. It's just like, dude, look how long it's taking to build a fucking where the Twin Towers were. I was just there the other day. You know how fucking long that shit takes, man?
Fucking 13 years. It's going to be forever.
They're still building that shit. Bro, fucking please, man. It's been 12 fucking years. They built the city of Dubai in like 5 years. You know what I mean? 6 years. The Roman Coliseum was built in 5 years. Get out of here. You fucking think you that long to build two fucking buildings?
Because they sit there and they have meetings.
I've been struggling. Look, us New Yorkers, bro. You know, right here in the city. We've been fucking struggling with the fucking New York City area, man. The whole area has been frozen for fucking 2 weeks at least. I hope it fucking freezes so fucking bad on that Super Bowl. I fucking hope it dumps snow on everybody. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a fucking Grinch. Fuck them all.
I am going to sit on my...
I can't give a shit. All these fucking whack bread people coming in the city and shit like that just for that. I can give a frog's ass for that shit. I don't care. I love it. You remember George Carlin when he would talk about the fires out there in California, the tsunamis, how they fucking tsunami comes and they fucking wipes out the whole area. And what do? They rebuild. And you know what's going to happen? Another tsunami is going to come in. Well, It's the same thing. Remember you used to talk about that with the fires out in California?
Yeah, yeah.
The house was burned down. They rebuild the house right there. What happened? Same fire happens all over again. And he used to say, well, that's my fire. Well, I feel the same way. Fuck that shit. You know what I mean? I hope it snows on all them motherfuckers. All these celebrities that don't follow football or, you know, they're coming out, they're going to watch these games and shit like that, you know. And then, you know, the halftime show, what pig is going to be up there popping out her boob or fucking letting her fucking little fucking JoJo show right through the fucking pants and shit. You know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I can give a shit.
It's fucking nonsense, but you know what? We wouldn't have it any other way because we're Americans, and that's part of our fucking heritage. Football holiday.
I see fucking Beyonce
Super
and
Sunday,
fucking
baby.
Dude, if I see Beyonce and Jay-Z, I hope a fucking snow cloud follows those two cocksuckers around. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a miserable old man, but I can't take it, Paul. I fucking hate it. They're shoving that shit up my ass. You know what I'm saying? I just can't take it.
I can't fucking sit.
You and I fucking. I played football, bro. I played in the snow. I had snow in my eyeballs and shit. I didn't give a shit, you know. That if you play football, that's part of what it is. Same shit with lacrosse.
It's not even the fucking players or the teams or the owners. It's the fucking pussies that are fucking all the money and the corporate shit.
Please,
but, bro, we're going to be out of time, so we're going to have to fucking pick this up where we left off next week.
Yeah, fuck them
all. Right. Dude, make sure you check us out, fitnessrxmen.com. Get your asses to that fucking Facebook page, like it, and check out the forum, post on it, and tell us to fuck off.
Please. And you all fuck off. Hey, Mike, get some fucking ass for me out there, will you? And make sure it's Latin, Latina, our favorite flavor.
Thank you for listening this week. Greg and Joe will be back next Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel with another edition of Fitness RX Radio. Have a pumped week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.